Corey Bascom expected his mother and brothers to return home soon, but they didn't show up until near noon of the day after his arrival. He walked to the barn to meet them as they rode in. They were dusty and weary, but his mother had a stern look of triumph about her.
What kept y'all? You ought to have been home yesterday.
We stayed around and finished a job you ought to have done for yourself.
What do you mean?
I mean your sweet little Alice girl ain't gonna do no talking to the law or anybody. Not ever again.
What did you do?
Me and your brother Lacey went back and took care of her.
Corey's jaw dropped. For a moment, he couldn't move. He could only look at her in disbelief. But he knew he had to believe. He felt a fool for not having realized she might do it. She was fully capable of killing anyone who stood in the way of her and the family. He remembered that years ago, she had stalked and shot a witness in Arkansas just before the grand jury was to convene and bring an indictment against old Ansel for stealing hogs.
But I loved her, Ma.
Love! Love is what you give to your family, not to some calf-eyed little tart. All your thinking lately has been below your belt, or you'd have seen what had to be done and done it yourself.
Damn you, Ma!
Bessie recoiled in disbelief, then brought up her quirt. Corey grabbed the limber leather end and jerked it out of her hands. He flung it aside and strode to where his saddle sat on a rough log rack.
Where are you going?
As far from you as I could get. From all of you!
Corey took a rawhide riata and cast a loop around the neck of his black horse.
Corey Bascom, you turn that horse loose. You ain't going nowhere.
How are you gonna stop me? You gonna shoot me too?
Bessie made a gesture at Lacey. Lacey came at Corey with clenched fists. Corey did not wait for him to strike the first blow.
That's for Alice. I ought to kill you.
Corey proceeded to saddle his horse. Lacey pushed to his feet, rubbing his aching jaw, wiping blood on his sleeve. Newley, who had been morosely silent since the shooting, watched his older brother's preparations for departure with concern. Corey said no more as he turned the horse and rode away, not once looking back.
He ain't fixed for traveling, Ma. He didn't take so much as a blanket, no grub at all.
And he'll come dragging back when he gets hungry enough.
Maybe not. He looked awful mad.
Then he'll have to take care of himself. He chose that girl over family.
Bessie spread her fingers against a face still reddened and burning from Corey's slap.
First time one of you boys ever raised a hand against me. I don't know why the Lord has let the world come to this. Folks are losing all sense of right and wrong, the way it looks to me.
Bessie recognized Rusty Shannon and the boy Andy on sight. She did not remember the name of the third rider, though she recalled that he had backed the Monahans when the Bascoms had made their first try at recovering Alice. She looked around to be sure her three remaining sons were close by and armed. They were. She had put years of training into preparing them for a hostile world, though they had fallen short of her expectations in many particulars, especially the weak-willed Newley and now Corey. She stood waiting, the quirt in her hand. Rusty Shannon had a look of death about him.
Where's Corey?
You can see for yourself. He ain't here.
You say he's not, but you could be lying.
He's gone away. What do you want him for?
For killing a woman.
And what woman would that be?
Josie Monahan.
Josie Monahan?
That's what I said.
Bessie began to shake, in spite of a determined effort to take a grip on her emotions. Shannon seemed to read her thoughts.
I guess you thought it was Alice. But Corey shot the wrong woman. I'm asking you again. Where's Corey?
Corey didn't...
Shut your mouth, Newley.
Andy brought his rifle to bear on the brothers, and Evan followed his lead with the shotgun.
We'll keep these boys off of your back if you want to go search the house.
Without answering, Rusty rode close to the picket house and dismounted, keeping the horse between himself and the dwelling. Rifle in hand, he walked to the door.
Told him Corey ain't here. He left, and I doubt he's coming back. Ever.
Won't do him any good. Rusty'll hunt till he finds him.
Shannon ain't a Monahan, and neither are you. What was that Josie woman to y'all?
Rusty and her were fixing to get married.
Rusty mounted his dun and returned, his eyes as threatening as before.
Which way was he going when he left here?
You know we wouldn't tell you. Look for yourself. Maybe you can find his tracks.
I'll find him. Consider him dead, because I'll find him no matter how long it takes.
Rusty jerked his head at his two companions. They rode away in the general direction of Fort Griffin. That was the course Corey had been taking when she last saw him.
Ma! You let them go on thinking Corey done it when it was really Lacey.
Bessie lashed newly with the quirt.
Ah! Don't ever let me hear you say that again. They'd have killed Lacey as sure as he's standing there.
But they'll kill Corey if they find him.
Corey can take care of himself better than Lacey. He's a better shot. But we stand together, us Bascoms. We take care of one another. And we don't point a finger at any of our own. Now gather close and listen. You boys have got a job of work to do. Lacey, you heard what he said. You shot the wrong woman.
Lacey was immediately defensive, raising his hands as if he expected her to take the quirt to him.
You know, we couldn't get real close to the house. She looked like Alice, best I could see in the lamplight.
You was in too much of a hurry to get it over with and run. So now, you got to do it again.
They'll have that place guarded better than it was before. I might not come back.
If you don't kill that girl, there ain't no use in you coming back. Time she gets through telling what she knows, Texas won't be big enough for any of us.
Let me go do it, Ma.
I got other work for you and little Lance. You heard what Shannon said. The only way to keep him from hunting down your brother is to kill him before he can.
How do you want us to do it?
Any way you can. Trail after him. First chance you get, bushwhack him.
What about them two that's with him?
Maybe they'll split up. Even if not, they don't have the killing fever in their eyes like Shannon has. Get them and they'll probably give up the chase.
We'll do our best.
Get at it then. Saddle your horses. I'll be putting some grub together.
Rusty stopped once they were out of the Bascom's sight.
I'm afraid I just made a bad mistake.
But I didn't see you do anything wrong.
I talked when I ought to have stayed quiet. They thought Corey had killed Alice. I let them know otherwise. Now they're liable to make another try for her.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
We'd better get back to Alice before they have a chance.
You two go. The Monahans may need all the help they can get. I'll keep after Corey. Maybe I can catch him before he finds out Alice is still alive.
By yourself?
He's by himself.
You don't even know which way he went.
No matter where he intends to go, I'm betting he'll stop at Fort Griffin first for supplies. Maybe I can pick up his trail there.
How long do you figure on being gone?
Don't look for me till you see me coming.
You ain't slept hardly since Josie died. You're worn out. If you do catch up with him, the shape you're in, you may not be a match for him. You could get yourself killed.
I lost a lot of sleep in my rangering days. Never got killed yet. Evan, there's something I want you to do.
Anything you ask.
It won't be hard. When you get home, you take Geneva in your arms and hold her like you'll never let her go.
He could hardly expect Corey Bascom to be waiting for him on the street in Griffintown, but he watched closely just the same. He saw everything that moved. He rode up to the saloon where he had stopped the time he had asked directions to the Bascom place. He found the same dour bartender wiping dust from glasses and placing them on a shelf behind the bar. The bartender gave him a critical study.
I know you, but you look different.
I'm hunting for Corey Bascom.
I told you the last time where he lives.
He left there. I thought he might have come this way.
Any special reason you're looking for him?
He killed a woman.
The barman stopped what he was doing and studied Rusty with a more critical eye.
Your woman?
She was.
A look on your face tells me you need a drink.
What I need, I won't find in that bottle.
But it might help. Here, drink it. I don't ordinarily mix myself in other people's problems, and I sure don't go around giving out information on other people's business. But I reckon this case justifies an exception. Corey was in here late yesterday. Bought supplies at a store down the street, then he stopped in here and got him two bottles of whiskey. Said he needed them for the road. Sounded like it was gonna be a long one.
Do you know which way he went after he left here?
No. I swear to God I don't. I never watched him. There's lots of trails out of here. They could have gone south toward the Conchos in Mexico. Could have gone east toward Arkansas or even north toward the Indian nations. There ain't no telling. With all the travelers who come and go, I doubt anybody paid him much attention. Here, down this one. For what you've been through, you ain't hardly started. Couldn't nobody blame you if you went and got yourself staggering drunk.
But then I couldn't do what I came for. Do you know what kind of horse he was riding?
He was a black one. That's all I can tell you.
Thanks for your help.
He went down the street to the general store. The clerk, like the bartender, was meticulous about not minding other people's business. He was evasive until Rusty told him he knew Corey had bought supplies.
Yeah, I sold him some stuff. Coffee, bacon, salt, cartridges, and a wool blanket. I took it he was figuring on a long trip, but I didn't ask him any questions. He didn't offer any information.
Did you see which direction he went leaving town?
With customers like the Bascoms, I make it a point not to see anything they do after they walk out this door. For all I know, he just evaporated.
Rusty recognized the futility of further questions. He walked back out to his horse. Rusty rode around the tall hill on which the army post stood and hit the military road that led southward toward distant Fort Concho. Fresh wagon tracks covered any trail Corey might have made if he had even ridden this way. Rusty swung back to the Clear Fork and looked at the wagon road that led eastward. It had the same abundance of fresh tracks as the other. The north road toward Forts Richardson and Sill would be no different. Rusty scouted around until dark, but knew his search for tracks was futile. Corey could have put on wings and flown away for all the trace that could be found now. He returned to the saloon, weary and sick at heart.
I told you. You ready for another drink?
A whole bottle.
He rode along the Clear Fork a while until full dark caught him. He unsaddled the dun, staked him on a long rope, then considered fixing a little supper. He'd not eaten anything today. He built a fire, but decided he was too weary to cook any of the bacon he carried. He opened the bottle and took a couple of long drinks. He stared into the flames, feeding in dead wood to keep the fire going. The need for sleep weighted his eyelids. The whiskey churned his empty stomach, but he feared the dreams that might assault him. He concentrated on the flames. They went in and out of focus as he turned to the bottle from time to time. An old arrow wound in his leg began to ache. It often did when he was tired. He kept seeing Josie's face in the flickering coals. He imagined Josie's voice, assuring him they would not have to wait much longer. He dwelled at length on the plans they had made for a long life together. Gone. Gone away from him in an instant. After a time, from grief and sleepiness and the whiskey, he became confused. Was it Josie's face he saw, or Geneva's? Somehow they started looking alike. He had loved two women, and he had lost them both. Sleep overwhelmed him. He sprawled on the ground and fell away into a troubled darkness. The bottle tipped over, the whiskey trickled out and soaked into the dry earth. Rusty boiled a can of coffee and forced himself to broil some bacon on a stick for his breakfast. At least the Clear Fork's water was good. A lot of water on the rolling plains was barely fit to drink. He felt better rested, but his head hurt from the whiskey. He wondered at the weakness that had allowed him to drink it. Normally, he seldom drank, and on the rare occasions that he did, it was more for sociability than for enjoyment. Josie's image was much on his mind, and he was less alert than he should have been. At mid-morning, he became aware that two riders had fallen in 300 or 400 yards behind him. He gave them little thought at first because the trail showed signs of frequent travel. But after a time, he noticed that when he slowed, they slowed. They seemed deliberately trying not to catch up to him. He sensed with rising alarm that they were waiting and watching for the right place to overtake and trap him. He wondered who they might be. He considered the possibility that Corey had doubled back to the family place and brought one of his brothers to help. Under other circumstances, Rusty would be content simply to elude those who followed him. The thought that one might be Corey made this situation different. He began looking for a chance to swap places with his pursuers, to employ a double-back trick Indians sometimes used against those who would trail them. Corey might be too shrewd to fall for it, but the chance was worth taking. All Rusty wanted was to get close enough to place Corey in his sights. He edged into the timber that lined the creek, trusting that it would hide him from the two riders' view. After a couple of hundred yards, he crossed the creek and rode back in the opposite direction. He hid himself in heavy foliage and dismounted, drawing his rifle from its scabbard. He placed his hand on the dun's nostrils to prevent it from nickering at the other horses should it feel moved to do so. The dun was not particularly sociable with its own kind. Through the heavy leaves, he watched the two men on the other side of the creek, one leaning from the saddle to observe Rusty's tracks. He felt a sharp disappointment as the pair came into clear view. Neither was Corey. But they were Bascoms, a couple of Corey's brothers. When they rode past him, he remounted and brought the rifle up high enough that he could place the stock against his shoulder in an instant. He put the dun across the creek and closed the distance.
Turn around and raise your hands.
One of the brothers complied, carefully reining his horse about, then lifting his arms. The younger one hesitated.
I won't say it again.
The youngster made a grab for the pistol on his hip. The younger brother lay in an awkward heap, just as he had landed. He hardly quivered. Newly Bascom's face seemed drained of blood.
Please, Shannon, don't shoot!
I won't unless you give me reason. Fish your six-shooter out of the holster and pitch it into the creek. Now the rifle under your leg. Who sent you all after me? Was it Corey?
We ain't seen Corey since he left home. It was my sent us.
Corey hasn't been back? You're not lying to me.
I wouldn't lie. Not when you got that rifle in my face and my baby brother laying there on the ground.
There was four of you brothers. Where's the other one at?
Ma sent Lacey out to do another job.
Rusty knew what that would be, to finish Alice.
All right. Get down real careful and go fetch your brother's horse.
Newly freed the bridle reins and led little Anse's mount back. Rusty dismounted and picked up Anse's pistol. He started to pitch it into the creek to join Newly's, but he reconsidered and shoved it into his waistband. An extra weapon might come in handy.
Put your brother's body up on his saddle. Tie his hands and feet so he won't slide off.
I don't know how I'm going to tell Ma about this. She's going to take it mighty hard.
Tell her it's her own fault. Sending you all out to do a dirty job.
Only as he watched Newly lead away the horse with his brother's body tied on it, did Rusty succumb to any sense of remorse. And that only because of little Anse's youth. The boy was a member of an outlaw family. Even with the best of luck, he had probably been fated to an early death by bullet or perhaps by hanging. It was likely that Bessie Bascom would live to mourn all of her sons, unless her machinations somehow resulted in her own death beforehand. He considered what Newly had said about the third brother, Lacey, being sent to kill Alice. That came as no surprise. Rusty had expected another try. He had warned Andy and Evan to keep a close watch. Now he began to reassess his own mission, the search for Corey Bascom. This endless riding was getting him nowhere. He might travel 1,000 miles and get no nearer to Corey than he already was. Even if he found Corey and killed him, that would do nothing for Josie except avenge her death. The best thing he could do for Josie at this point would be to help keep her younger sister alive. He decided to return to the Monahan place. He would not give up his search for Corey, but he would, reluctantly, defer it for a while. Vengeance would have to wait. Rusty approached the farm, his shoulders hunched, his body so tired he held himself in the saddle by force of will. The dun horse seemed to falter in its step. It needed long rest and many generous helpings of grain. James Monahan walked out from the barn.
My God, Rusty, is that you? You look like hell.
I've been through hell and out the far side. I'd swear I've ridden this poor horse 1,000 miles.
Well, he shows it. You find any sign of Corey?
Not one. He could be in Mexico or Colorado or California for all I found out. How are things here?
Grim.
Is Alice all right?
You know, she's feeling low. Blames herself. Still wishes it'd been her instead of Josie.
The Bascoms made any more effort to get her?
One. Somebody tried to sneak up to the house a couple of nights ago. Andy challenged him with a shotgun. Whoever it was, he turned and ran. Andy gave him a blast and heard him holler.
Oh. All the Bascoms except Corey know Alice is alive. Far as I can tell, he still thinks she's dead.
Rusty told about his encounter with the two younger Bascom brothers.
Maybe losing that boy will convince the old woman to take what's left of her family and leave the country.
You ever see a hurt snake get so mad it bites itself? She'll probably be meaner than ever and more determined. All the way back, I've been thinking, we need to get Alice away from here.
Where could she go if they wouldn't find her?
My old friend Tom Blessing has a wife who's ailing. He's been wishing he could find a woman to take care of her till she's back on her feet. It's a long ways down there. The Bascoms would have no idea how to find her.
Mama's still in bad shape. I don't know as Alice would want to leave her.
Clemmie's lost one daughter. What would become of her if she lost another?
Then we'll send Alice away with you, whether she wants to go or not.
Me and Andy can take her out of here after dark. Even if the Bascoms find out she's gone, they won't have any idea where she went.
Don't you think you need to rest a day or two first?
We don't know how much rest the Bascoms are taking. I can rest after I get home.
Alice was strongly opposed to leaving, as Rusty had expected her to be. But even Clemmie urged her to go.
I don't figure I'm staying in this bed forever. I'll still have Warren and Geneva and James. They'll see after me. You go and see after yourself.
Alice gave in. Clemmie beckoned Rusty to her side and took his hand. Her grip was weak. This woman had been the heart and soul of the Monahan family. He hated to leave her now when she was ill.
I know you're hurting. We're all hurting. But I've been there before. It passes with time.
I hope so. Because it sure hurts right now. You all are the nearest thing to family that I've had since my folks died.
You'll always be family to us.
Preacher Webb walked with Rusty up to the little Monahan Cemetery. A bare new mound had appeared beside the grassed-over plots where Lon Monahan and his son Billy had been buried years before.
She's not really here, you know. She's gone on to a better world.
I wanted her here in this world. If your God is so merciful, why does he let things like this happen?
People have asked that ever since time began. I don't know the answer to it. I just know there is sunlight, and there is dark. There is good, and there is evil. It's up to those of good heart to try and end the evil.
Well, I'll put an end to Corey Bascom if I ever find him. And I'll find him.
The Bascoms have taken away something precious to you. But don't let them take away your soul. You don't stop evil by doing more evil. Whatever you do, do it within the law.
It's been a long time since we've had real law in Texas.
But we'll have it again. Be a part of it like you used to be.
Like in the Rangers?
Like in the Rangers. I hear they're coming back.
Bessie Bascom had been preparing to milk the cow when she first saw the incoming rider. So long as she was outdoors, she missed very little that moved. She had watched the horseman now for half an hour, hoping he would prove to be Corey. Her eldest was the only one she felt was capable of lifting the darkness that had befallen the Bascoms. Sure, he was the one who had brought it upon them in the first place, fetching that girl Alice here, making her privy to the family's doings. And sure, he had taken it badly when he thought his brother Lacey had killed her. But she felt he would come around to his mother's way of thinking eventually. He was family. When the chips were down, the Bascoms always pulled together. Her sons had rallied like troopers when old Anse died at the hands of the state police. They would rally now. She knew the rider was one of her sons. She knew them by the way they sat in the saddle, the same way their father had done before them. In time, she became aware that he led another horse. It appeared to be carrying a pack. That was strange. She had not sent the boys for supplies. She had ordered Newley and little Anse out to trail the man named Shannon. She had dispatched Lacey to finish the job he had botched the first time by killing Josie instead of Alice. He had returned in pain, barely able to sit in the saddle. She had spent more than an hour digging buckshot out of his backside while he howled like a hurt dog. Not until the horseman was within 100 yards did she recognize him as Newley. Her heart began to race as she realized what she had thought was a pack was in reality a body tied across a saddle.
Little Lance! My baby! Oh, Lord God, my baby!
Oh. Bessie threw her arms over the body and kissed the still, cold face. Bessie turned on Newley. Accusation overrode the grief in her eyes.
What happened?
Wasn't no fault of mine, Ma. He ought to have tried to draw on that Shannon. It was over before I could move.
I'm guessing you never moved at all. I'm guessing you just sat there.
Wasn't nothing I could do. Shannon came up from behind. He had the drop on us before we even seen him.
But your little brother drawed on him just the same.
He oughtn't to have.
Why didn't you draw too? You could have at least shot Shannon while he was busy shooting your baby brother.
He'd have shot me too. You had no idea how fast he is.
Maybe it would have been better. You'd have been spared the shame of bringing this innocent baby boy back here dead. Well, you don't appear to have a scratch on you.
I'm sorry, Ma. I've done the best I know how.
I'd have taken the quirt to you, but it wouldn't do no good. Wouldn't have make you no smarter nor braver. Wouldn't bring little Lance back to us. I'm just glad old Lance ain't here to see this. One son dead, one son gone off to God knows where. Two other sons, dumber than dirt. Can't even take care of a simple job. It's a mean world we've come to.
I'll go find that Shannon and I'll kill him.
No. We'll give your brother a decent burying first. Then I'll want you to go find Corey and bring him back here.
Ain't no telling where he's at.
He's somewhere. You'll find him.
What's Lacey gonna do?
When he's able to ride again, I'll send him back to watch for another chance at that girl. It's your job to find Corey before Shannon does.
Do we have to kill Alice?
Get them silly romantic notions out of your mind. You know it's her that's at the root of all our trouble. It's like she's cast a witch's spell over this family. Trouble will keep throwing its shadow over our door till we've got rid of her. Now go carry your baby brother to the house. I'll be washing him while you and Lacey dig a proper grave. We'll send him to glory in style. And when the time comes, we'll send Shannon to hell.
Looking back in the rosy glow of sunup, Rusty saw that the wagon wheels were cutting deep tracks through the winter brittle grass. The days were warming, but the nights still brought chill enough to delay the green up. Riding Long Red alongside the wagon, Andy looked back with concern.
Even a blind Apache could follow our trail.
Alice sat on the wagon seat beside Rusty. He had not spoken to her and had hardly looked at her since they'd left the Monahan farm about midnight. Dense clouds had hidden the moon. He had counted on darkness to hide their leaving.
There's other tracks besides ours, freight wagons and such.
Andy kept looking at the back trail, not convinced that no one was following. They took a long noon rest. Rusty slept, despite pain from the old wound. He was still weary after his long search for Corey Bascom. He suspected that Andy didn't even try to sleep, watching their trail for sign of pursuit. Moving on, Rusty felt better for having had a little rest. Andy's shoulders drooped a little.
You ought to have slept while you had a chance.
Somebody had to watch.
They don't even know we're gone.
Maybe not, and maybe they do. That old woman has got an evil spirit sitting on her shoulder. For all we know, it's telling her everything.
What does an evil spirit look like?
It can look like anything. Most of the time you can't see it, but you can feel that it's there. Did you hear the owl last night just before we left?
There's been owls around the Monahan place for years.
Not like that one. For all we know, that owl could have been the old woman herself, watching us. There's some people can do that, you know, turn themselves into something else. I knew a medicine man once who could turn himself into a wolf.
Did you see him do it?
No, but I talked to people who said they saw him go into a cave and a wolf came out. He could howl like one. I've heard him start and wolves would answer him.
Oh, that doesn't prove anything. I've known a few white people who could do that. It helped them hunt down wolves.
Andy said nothing more for a while. His feelings were wounded a little. Argument over such matters was pointless. Neither he nor Rusty would have a change of mind.
This far south, do we need to worry about Indians?
You never stop watching for Indians, wherever you are. The odds are that most of them are still in winter camp north of us. The way the country is settling up, they're being crowded off a lot of their old stomping grounds.
Losing their buffalo to the hide hunters. Damn shame, people killing buffalo for the skin and leaving the meat to rot. What do they expect the Indian to do?
I expect most would like to see the Indians all evaporate, like a puddle of water in the sunshine.
Well, they won't. They'll take just so much crowd and then they'll raise up and fight.
If there aren't any Indians around here, what's that yonder?
Rusty saw a dozen horsemen moving toward them out of the west. He knew at a glance that they were Indians.
Next time I talk to you about owls, maybe you'll listen.
We'll head for that buffalo wallow yonder. Maybe they haven't seen us.
They probably saw us before we saw them. Anyway, that hole's not deep enough to hide us.
Rusty took the wagon into the dry-bottomed wallow.
Help Alice down. She's too good a target up on this wagon. Look in my saddlebag. You'll find that Bascom boy's pistol. Give it to her.
We don't want to kill any of them unless we're forced to. Some might be friends of mine.
Then they'd better act friendly.
Alice checked the pistol's load. She appeared more determined than frightened.
You sure you know how to shoot that thing?
Mama taught me to shoot before she taught me how to sew. Said every country girl ought to be able to use a gun, because there wouldn't always be a man around to do it for her.
Andy, your eyes are sharper than mine. Are they wearing any paint?
They'd stopped 100 yards out and seemed to be considering their options.
I don't see any. Probably just out hunting.
But they wouldn't pass up 3 scalps and 4 horses if they thought they would come easy.
I'm afraid that's just what they're thinking. They act like they're fixing to give us a try.
Andy handed Rusty his rifle.
I'm kin of sorts. I'm going out and see if they'll parley.
You don't look like anybody that's kin to them. They're liable to kill you before you can tell them you're a cousin.
If they're bound to kill me, they'll do it anyway. 3 of us ain't got a chance against them all. Told you about that damned owl.
Andy moved toward the Indians, his hands in the air to show he was unarmed. Rusty held his breath. Some of the Comanches raised their bows. At least 3 had rifles or shotguns. Andy began making sign talk. The Indians surrounded him, and for a few moments he was out of sight. Then Andy emerged from the circle of Indians. He walked slowly and confidently toward the wallow. The Indians followed at a respectful distance, offering no overt threat. Andy signaled from 50 yards out that everything was all right and motioned for Rusty and Alice to lower their guns. Rusty did, but not by much.
Told you it was better to talk than to fight. Turned out I know a couple of them. We used to play at stealing horses together.
They're past the age for play acting. They look like they mean business.
They're hunting for buffalo. First thing they wanted to know was if we are, too. They thought maybe the wagon was for hauling hides. Seems like there's a lot of white hunters working the buffalo range north of here. It's got the people pretty mad.
Tell them those hunters are mostly out of Kansas. We're Texans.
They don't like Texans either.
2 of the Comanches ventured up close enough to look down into the wallow.
Don't let them see fear, Alice. If they've got mischief on their minds, it'll encourage them.
The pair focused their attention on her. She still held the pistol cocked and ready, though she diverted the muzzle a little to one side. She looked cocked and ready, too, if they made any direct move toward her.
It's all right, Alice. It's not often they see a white woman up close. They asked for tobacco, but I told them we don't have any. They'll settle for some sugar. You don't find much of that in a Comanche camp.
Geneva had bagged sugar and coffee and salt for use on the trip to the Colorado River.
Give them the sugar, Alice. We can do without it.
Some sugar granules clung to the outside of the bag. An Indian wet his finger, ran it through the sugar, then touched the finger to his tongue. He broke into a broad grin.
Alice, you've made a friend for life.
Are they gonna eat it right out of the sack?
Sure. Hasn't everybody done that? They don't seem as fearsome when you just see 1 or 2 up close, do they?
They look scary enough for me.
You have to get used to them is all. They're people just like everybody else, except a little different.
Rusty burned to be on his way, but he was hesitant about leaving the dubious shelter of the buffalo wallow until the Indians were out of sight in a direction other than south. He watched them pass the sugar sack around. Apparently there was some dissatisfaction over the fairness of the division, for the last man angrily threw the empty sack at the one who had offered it to him.
See what I told you? They're just like everybody else.
Not until the Indians were out of sight did Rusty motion for Andy to help Alice back onto the wagon.
They might be friends of yours, Andy, but we're traveling till after dark tonight.
I'd worry a lot more about them Bascoms than about my Comanche kinfolks. Them Bascoms ain't civilized.
They reached the farm just at sunset.
It's too late to go on to Tom's tonight.
You've built it up some since we stayed here during the war. Broke out some more land and built another cabin?
The new cabin is Andy's. I thought he ought to have a house of his own when Josie and me... Wonder if Lynn Tanner is around. Be like him to have gone off on another passeer.
Tanner appeared on the dog run of the larger cabin.
Howdy! Y'all are just in time for supper. All you gotta do is fix it.
Lynn, I was afraid you'd be off to hell and gone.
I would have been if you hadn't got home when you did.
Where to this time? Thought you'd seen all you wanted of your kinfolks.
I have, but now I got other things to do. Alice? Is that you?
It's me.
You're getting to where you look more like your sisters every time I see you. How are they getting along?
Josie's dead. I'll tell you about that later.
Oh, damn. But I'm sorry.
You seen any strangers around here?
There's getting to be a lot of traffic around this place. Sometimes two or three people a day go in one direction or another. Country's settling up to where it don't hardly seem the same anymore.
These people would likely have asked about Rusty or Alice.
In that case, nary a soul.
The Bascoms couldn't have gotten here ahead of us even if they had known where we were going. For all they know, we're headed north for Colorado or east for Arkansas. If they even found out we're gone.
That old woman knows.
Tanner looked from one to another, confused but content to wait until someone saw fit to explain.
You know anything about Tom Blessing's wife?
She's still poorly. Shandy was here yesterday, helped me plant some tomatoes and okra. He'd been by to see the Blessings a couple of days ago.
Shandy was a former slave. His little place lay between Rusty's farm and the Blessings.
I brought Alice to stay with Mrs. Blessing and try to help her get back on her feet.
Yeah, she's a grand old lady. She'll perk up just from having the company.
Rusty told Alice she could have the bedroom side of the double cabin.
I told you to tell her hello for me. I didn't mean you had to bring her all the way here.
Rusty told him as much as he figured Tanner needed to know for the time being, and Tanner nodded gravely.
I am mighty sorry about Josie. If any of them Bascoms come poking around here looking for Alice, I'll blow a hole in them you could pull a wagon through.
Just a little hole would be enough, long as it's in a place to do the most good.
Fact is, though, I won't be here. I've just been waiting till you got home. I've joined the Rangers.
The Rangers?
You probably ain't heard. Governor Koch is calling up a lot of the old hands. The Morris brothers brought the word to me. They joined up, too.
Those Morris boys are liable to get you shot.
I'm too skinny to be hit. I can hide behind a fence post. Anyway, them boys have got their hearts in the right place.
It's not their hearts that worry me. It's their heads.
How old do you have to be to join?
Can't rightly say. If it's the way it used to be, you're old enough now. Got to furnish your own horse and your own gun.
I have those.
Don't know what the pay'll be. Doesn't matter much anyhow. I'm used to not finding anything in my pockets except my hands.
You'd better take a long look before you jump, Andy. It can be a hard life.
I've never had no feather bed.
Rusty decided upon the wagon to take Alice to the Blessing place. The things she had hastily gathered from home were already in it. That would save having to pack them on a horse. He left Andy and Tanner to clean up the place. Tanner's housekeeping had been of the lick and a promise variety. They went by Shanty's farm. It was but little out of the way. Shanty had no real last name, though when he had to put his ex on legal papers, he adopted the surname of his late owner, Isaac York, who had willed him the farm. Shanty was in his garden, hoeing out shallow trenches and planting seeds, then covering them lightly. His years weighed heavily upon his thin shoulders. He straightened slowly with obvious back pain. Recognition of his visitors brought him to the garden gate. He removed his hat in deference to Alice, or perhaps to both of them. Old slave habits died hard.
Y'all get down and come in the house.
His house was a cabin built of logs to replace one burned by night riders who had resented the idea of a black man owning a piece of land in their midst. Firm talk by Rusty, Tom Blessing, and other friends had put an end to that kind of devilment. A few neighbors still did not like his being there, but they had been buffaloed into silence.
We're headed for the Blessing place. You remember Alice?
I do, but it was a long time ago. She wasn't much more than a thin sapling. She's growed into a fine-looking young lady.
Alice is going to help Mrs. Blessing.
Oh, the Lord will smile on her for that. I've been worried about Miss Blessing.
But one thing, Shanty. If some stranger should come asking about Alice, you haven't seen her. You don't have any idea where she's at. You don't even know who she is.
Well, hard to believe somebody'd mean harm to this young lady.
Well, they do. That's why I've brought her all the way down here.
Rusty explained briefly about the Bascoms and Josie's death. Shanty nodded sadly.
I just act like I don't know nothing. They generally figure that way anyhow.
Rusty thought Shanty looked more tired than usual. That concerned him.
You feeling all right? You haven't been working too hard and getting yourself too hot.
Work and me been friends all my life. And friends know not to crowd one another too much.
Rusty took the remark as a sign that Shanty thought he had been working too hard and was not getting enough rest.
We'll be getting on to the blessings.
Yeah, may the Lord walk ahead of you and smooth the road.
Tom Blessing's dog announced the wagon's coming and trotted to meet it, tail wagging vigorously. Tom stepped out onto the opening between the two sections of the log cabin and shaded his eyes with his big hand.
Get down! Get down and come on in!
Tom raised his strong arms to help Alice down from the wagon.
Boy, is this Josie? Lord, how you've changed.
I'm Alice, Mr. Blessing. I've come to stay and help take care of your wife.
Alice? Then you really changed. Rusty, you left here aiming to get married. Leave the bride at your place?
Josie's dead. I'll tell you all about it in a little while.
Come on in, girl. Mrs. Blessing will be glad to see you.
Tom quickly took Alice into the house. Rusty waited by the wagon. After introductions had been made, Tom Blessing came back outside to talk to Rusty.
Alice and the missus are going to hit it off real good. It was mighty thoughtful of you to bring her.
I had a reason. She needs you all right now as much as you need her. More, maybe. Things have gone bad for her lately.
Not just for her, judging by what you said. What happened, Rusty?
Painfully, Rusty explained about Corey Bascom, Josie's death at his hands, and why he'd felt it necessary to bring Alice so far from home.
Oh, I reckon this is about as hard a thing as a man ever has to take in his life.
Another hard thing is knowing that the man who did it is running loose. But he won't stay loose forever. I'm gonna hunt him down like a hydrophobic dog.
How are you gonna do that? You've got no idea where to start. He could be 10 miles from here, or 1,000.
I'll just give up everything else and hunt till I find him.
That could take you years.
I don't know what else to do.
Did Len tell you he'd signed up for the Rangers?
He told me. Andy's itching to do the same thing.
It's not a bad idea. The Rangers could be the answer to your problem.
I don't see how.
Oh, think about it. You're just one man, looking for another man who could be any place. If you were a Ranger, you could put him on the fugitive list. Instead of just one man looking for him, there'd be 100 or 2, however many Rangers there are. And I can send word out to the sheriffs around the state to be watching for him.
But I want to be the one who gets him. I want to look him square in the eyes and tell him he's fixing to die.
What's more important, bringing him to justice or taking your own personal revenge?
And the way I feel, I want to do it myself.
Revenge can poison the soul, Rusty. The man on the receiving end dies just once and generally quick. The man out for revenge may die a little every day as long as he lives. Remember after your daddy Mike was killed? You almost let it get the best of you that time. Even a justified killing can eat on a man like slow poison. Say you kill this Corey Bascom, but destroy yourself in the doing of it. Do you think that's what Josie would want? Deep down, you know.
There's no way to ask her. All I know for sure is that I want to see Bascom dead.
Then at least go about it in the right and proper way. Do it through the law. You could do a lot of good being a ranger. There's still Indian trouble up north, and what the Yankees called Reconstruction spawned enough outlaws to overstock hell. It'll take some strong-minded lawmen to put them down.
Is that why you let them make you sheriff again?
I looked around and didn't see anybody I thought fitted the job. Except maybe you. And you had your hands full with that farm.
I still do. That's the reason I can't join the Rangers.
But you'd leave in a minute if you got a lead on Bascom.
Well, that's different.
Rusty and Tom turned and saw a rider pushing hard, waving his hat.
Nobody's ever come riding in that fast to bring me good news.
Sheriff Tom, there's been a shooting in town and a robbery.
Slow down. Get your breath. Then tell me about it.
The rider had the look of a clerk, his shirt white except where sweat had soaked through and attracted dust. His string necktie was hanging askew.
Two men, strangers, held up the general store. When Mr. Bancroft reached under the counter, they shot him.
Kill him?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. He was still breathing when I left, but he looked like a goner. They rode out heading west, cross country. I followed their tracks part of the way here. It was pretty plain.
Well, I ought to be able to cut across and pick him up. Thanks. See what I told you about lawlessness, Rusty? It's got mighty close to home.
You want me to help you?
Well, I'd be much obliged.
I'll need to get back home and swap this wagon for my horse. Need to tell Andy and Lynn, too, or they'll worry about where I'm at.
I'll swing by your cabin and pick you up after I get a line on them tracks. Want to say adios to Alice?
You do it for me. I'll be getting started.
Yeah. Rusty climbed into the wagon and put the team into motion. Looking back once, he saw Alice standing in the dog run, watching him. Big question in her eyes. He turned away and put his mind to the task at hand. Two men. Robbing stores was one of the Bascom brothers' specialties, Alice had said. He knew it was wildly unlikely that they had been the perpetrators here, but the thought was intriguing enough to set his imagination to racing. He pictured himself confronting Corey Bascom. The thought set his skin to burning with impatience.
Yeah!
Approaching the home place, he wondered that he saw no one in field or garden. Long Red and Len's horse were nowhere in sight. Len's horse was something of a barn lover, usually found within easy reach of feed, not unlike his owner. Rusty saw his bay grazing alone near the shed. He put the vehicle under the shed. Quickly unhooking the team, he pitched the harness into the wagon instead of taking time to hang it up properly. He caught the bay and saddled him, then hurried up to the cabin to fetch his rifle. He found no fire in the kitchen. On the table, he saw a sheet of paper weighted down by a tin cup half full of cold coffee. Rusty picked up the letter and worked his way through Tanner's bad spelling like a rickety plow in a rock-strewn field.
Dear Rusty, I take pencil in hand to inform you that me and Andy are gone off to the Rangers. We didn't wait because we knowed you would raise hell. Don't worry about Andy. I will see that he don't get in no trouble. With best regards, your very good friend, Len Tanner, Esquire.
Oh, damn that Len.
Rusty read and weighed the significance of this development. He could go to Andy's Ranger captain and argue that Andy was underage, but he had no idea to what company the youngster might be assigned, or where it would be stationed. As for age, Andy looked to be in his early 20s, and Rusty couldn't prove him younger. This threw a bad kink into his rope. Tom was not far behind him. He reined up from a hard trot as Rusty walked out to untie the bay.
Len and Andy going with us?
They're gone. Went off to join the Rangers. I could wring Len Tanner's scrawny neck like a chicken.
You already told me he was going, but Andy is a surprise.
Did you find the tracks?
A couple miles south of here. They're staying off the roads. Don't want anybody seeing them.
Well, let's be going after them. What happened to the fellow who told you about the robbery?
I sent him back to town. The wrong kind of help can get you killed.
Tom led the way, angling southwestward. He cut the tracks in a short time. The fugitives were evidently depending upon fast horses rather than trying to cover their trail.
People noticed them camped outside of town last night, but never gave them much thought. There's always folks passing through. These were probably watching to see where business looked the best. Since we don't have a bank yet, the store must have seemed like the richest pickings. Old man Bancroft was a gentle fella. He ought not to have reached for a gun.
Maybe they'd have shot him anyway. There are men like that. Didn't get enough killing in the war. Or didn't go, and now they're making up for it.
Which means we better be careful how we ride up on them. Bancroft's funeral is already one too many.
Another one or two would be all right, as long as it's the right men getting buried.
You've got a hard look in your face. I don't know as I like it.
Been some hard things happened to me. Andy going off like that doesn't make it any easier.
He's not your son. He's not even your brother. Sure, he's still young, but he's shown that he can think and do for himself. I wouldn't mind having him with us right now.
I'm glad he's not.
The trail presented little challenge. A recent shower had left the ground soft so that the hooves had made deeper than usual cuts in it. Tom stopped to study a place where one of the horses had paused to urinate.
They ain't too far ahead of us. An hour or so. Maybe two.
Farther on, Tom pointed to a spot where the ground had been scarred slightly.
Looks like one of the horses stepped in that hole yonder and went down.
Boot tracks showed that one man had walked around a little before remounting.
Horse must not have broke its leg, but it'll be limping some. That'll slow our boys up.
Presently, Rusty saw a single rider ahead of them. At first, he couldn't tell whether the person was coming or going, but soon it became clear that he was moving to meet them. He was on a bareback mule with a wagon harness instead of a saddle. He carried the long reins looped like a lariat.
That looks like old man Gillis. What's he doing riding a wagon mule?
As Gillis approached, it was plain that he'd been hurt. Blood had dried on the side of his face. A deep bruise had turned dark from his cheekbone up to the edge of his gray hair.
You look like you've been thrown off and drug.
Yeah, well, two men stopped me. Swapped me a lame horse for my best mule, taking it right out the harness. When I tried to argue with them, they hit me across the head with a six-shooter. If I hadn't had this old wool hat on, it would have broken my skull like an eggshell.
Looks bad. I hope you're not going far.
I'm heading for my son's place over the rise yonder. Him and my daughter-in-law fixed me up. But it makes me mad in hell losing that good mule. How do they expect a man to farm without a good pair of mules?
You're lucky you didn't lose more than a mule. They robbed the store and shot old man Bancroft.
Oh, Tadwad Bancroft? They must have found out he still had the first dollar he ever made. Most of the 1 cent, too. But I hope he ain't dead.
Don't know. But I expect you'll be getting your mule back. I doubt your thief will want to ride him any further than he has to. He'll be looking to steal another horse. Who lives yonder that way past your place?
Young folks named Plumley moved in last year and broke out new ground. I'd hate to think them young people's in danger. That boy's come and helped me several times, and he's got a mighty sweet little girl for a wife. I better come with you.
No. You better go on to your son's place and get took care of. Me and Rusty, we'll see after them young people. Can you tell me what these fellas look like?
Yeah. One was tall and lanky, had a bushy black beard. The other one was a heavier stock, had a sort of brownish mustache, couple of days' worth of whiskers. Now, right before that stocky one brung that gun down on my noggin, I seen that he had a long scar on the back of his hand. It's kind of bluish. And I will tell you what, Tom, both of these fellas, they had mean eyes. I seen eyes like that in war. Man, with them kind of eyes, ain't much he won't do.
That was a better description of the thieves than the town clerk had given. Tom nodded at Rusty.
Then we best not give them time to do more than they've already done.
It would have been easy to have missed the Plumley farm had the tracks not led Rusty and Tom to it. The cabin was small, without a dog run, and had been built beneath a hill that hid it from the south. A modest field lay below the cabin. Corn plants stood inches high, for the growing season had barely begun.
Tom, the corral yonder. I bet you that's Gillis's mule.
No horses were in sight. The thieves were probably gone, but Tom was taking no chances.
That cabin's got no window in the back. We better come up on the blind side.
They dismounted 50 yards away and led their horses, pausing to tie them to a tree. They went the rest of the way to the cabin with pistols in their hands. They paused to listen a minute before Tom pointed to the front door. Rusty noticed that it was ajar. Rusty gave the door a hard shove with his shoulder and stepped quickly inside. A woman cowered against a back wall. She brought her arms up defensively.
No more! Please, no more!
Rusty's eyes took a moment to adjust to the room's poor light. The young woman was standing against the wall like it was the only thing holding her up. Her dress was torn from shoulder to waist. As she lowered her arms, he saw bruises on her face.
We're here to help you, ma'am. We're not the ones who hurt you.
Tom showed her the badge on his shirt. She buckled at the knees.
Here.
Rusty caught her before she went all the way to the floor. He helped her to a wooden chair at the table. Blessing produced a small flask of whiskey from a pocket.
Rusty, let her have some of this.
Rusty lifted a coffee cup from the table. He held it to the woman's bruised lips.
Drink this. It'll do you good.
Where's your husband?
She seemed unable to look him or Rusty in the eyes.
He went out early this morning to look for some stray cattle. He hasn't come back yet. We just had one other horse. I heard them run up into the pen and shut the gate. When I went out there to see what they're up to, they saw me. My husband, what's he gonna say?
If he's any kind of man, he'll know you couldn't help what they did. Wasn't none of it your fault. You got any neighbors? Somebody we could send over here to be with you?
A couple of miles southwest.
We'll swing by and let them know. And don't you worry about them men coming back. We'll stay on their trail till we catch them. Come on, Rusty.
Rusty burned inside. His hands trembled as he untied his horse.
I've seen some bad men in my time. I've known some that would murder a man without batting an eye and steal anything that wasn't bolted to the floor. But I've never known any that would do a thing like this to a woman.
It's a new world. I like the old one a heap better.
Dusk came too quickly. Rusty knew they would soon be unable to see the tracks.
They've got to stop sometime. They've got one fresh horse, but the other has been pushed all day.
Ours too. We set off in such a hurry that we forgot about one thing.
What's that?
We haven't got anything to eat.
Rusty patted the blanket roll tied behind the cantle of his saddle.
We're not plumb out of luck. I brought along some jerky left over from our trip down from the Monahans.
Jerky?
It's better than nothing.
Just barely.
Indians could get by on it for days. And I ate a heap of it when I was with the Rangers.
Me too. When I was a youngster. I always hoped I'd never have to again.
The tracks were hard to see as daylight faded. The fugitives had stopped to water themselves and their horses at a spring some early settler had put a low rock wall around, but later abandoned. Reluctantly, Rusty conceded that they had no choice but to stop for the night. The remains of a picket cabin leaned precariously, threatening to fall over if given a fair push.
Feel like sleeping under a roof tonight?
That roof would likely cave in on us. Anyway, I'll bet the place is full of snakes.
After watering the bay, he staked it on a long rawhide rope so it could graze within a wide circle. Tom did the same.
Well, how about that jerky?
Rusty unrolled his blanket and took out a bundle wrapped in oilskin. Jerky was strips of meat dried in the sun, usually tasting more of salt and pepper than of beef. Rangers had often carried it with them on long scouts because they had no guarantee of finding fresh game. Though far from sumptuous, it could sustain life until a man found better.
I've known of men losing a tooth on this stuff, but I never saw anybody get fat on it.
I don't understand men like that. What do you suppose gets into them?
Hard to say. War soured some of them. Some was raised that way by folks that had coyote blood in them. But some are just born with a deep streak of mean. Something's missing out of their brain or their heart. They're hard to cure.
There's one way. Kill them dead and bury them deep.
Tom frowned and pulled his saddle blanket around him. Rusty awakened long before daylight. He rolled to one side, then the other, trying to find a comfortable position. There was none. He felt as if he would willingly trade a good horse for a cup of strong coffee. At last, Tom sat up, throwing back the blanket. Only the faintest hint of light showed in the east. The first thing Tom did was look around for the horses. That instinct was deeply ingrained into men used to living along the frontier, where a good horse was always a temptation to the light-fingered breed. white or red.
They're still where we staked them. I've been watching them for hours.
Oh, you didn't sleep much.
Kept seeing that poor woman, and then I'd think of Josie. I kept thinking of her in that woman's place.
At least that woman is still alive.
And probably half wishing she wasn't. There's not much worse a man can do to a woman short of leaving her dead.
Tom threw his saddle onto his horse's back and tightened the cinch. Rusty was saddled up and ready to ride before Blessing came to.
Sooner or later, you gotta come to grips with what happened to Josie. Otherwise, it'll drive you crazy.
I'll come to grips when I find Corey Bascom. Those two renegades will do for a start.
Rusty chewed on a strip of jerky as he set out impatiently at a stiff trot. It should have been Tom's place to pick up the tracks, but Rusty didn't give him time.